Good morning, Breakfast Club family. I'm Karen. I am a grateful alcoholic. My sobriety date is October 9th, 2016. I'm coming up on 5 years next month. If you'd have told me that 5 years ago, I would have laughed pretty hard because I didn't think I could stay sober one day, much less 5 years. But I love AA, and it helped save my life, and I'll be forever grateful, especially for the How Place. I've told my story here several years ago and several times since. El Contrera didn't just disappear. I helped facilitate a Zoom meeting at night called the Crazy Eights. That is an offshoot from the Breakfast Club. And we did a Breakfast Club AM and a Breakfast Club PM meeting when COVID started. And eventually my work got so busy again I could only attend the night meetings for the most part. But I have started coming back here and really, really glad to see the fellowship and see people in person again. So I'm going to start off my story by telling a little bit of the past. Some of you have heard it, so that part won't change. And then tell you how I got here and what my solutions are today. So I was born in California. Only stayed there for a year and a half. My mother decided to run off with from South Carolina with an Air Force guy who was an alcoholic. So that didn't sit too well with my mother's family. And she got pregnant with my sister when I was a year and a half in California. And at the same time, my alcoholic father decided to get in a wreck with his mistress and got thrown in jail. So she hopped on the nearest airplane and came back to South Carolina, where we got to live with my grandmother for the next 6 years. And that was spectacular. There was stability. There was no alcohol in the home. And we were in church every time the doors opened. I think my grandmother must have started First Baptist Church in Columbia, because we certainly seemed to have the key to the door. And that was wonderful. So my early upbringing, alcohol was not involved. I'm not going to say not whatever. It wasn't involved for me. Being raised in a Baptist church, of course, alcohol is forbidden, right? Except when they can't see you. Yeah. But for me, I could have cared less. I had a great upbringing in the church. I had a great youth group. I had a great relationship with my God, and I didn't care about it. My mother, on the other hand, worked 3 jobs, but on the weekends, she and the neighbors turned it out. So it was alcohol every weekend. I just ignored them and kept about my business. I was very involved in sports, music, and the church, and various other things. So I really didn't have time to get involved in that kind of activity, nor did I care to. After, I guess my first drink, though, was with my mother at 16. We were out at dinner, and I decided I wanted to try her Pabst Blue Ribbon. Yuck. That had to be the nastiest thing I ever put in my mouth. I said, well, you don't have to worry about me growing up and drinking, because I'm not going to do it. And then at high school graduation, I remember the gang went out, and I had 3 beers that night. That about knocked me for a loop. And, of course, she's sitting up waiting for us at midnight to come in and grilled me. And I said, don't worry, it won't happen again. And it didn't for quite a while. I went off to college on a basketball scholarship. Played at Anderson University, which was a Baptist school. So, once again, drinking was not allowed. And God help you if you got caught. So I stayed away from alcohol my first year in college, second year. Picked it up a little toward the end. It still wasn't a major player in my life. Finished playing basketball, played for 2 national championship teams, went on to another 4-year school. Wanted to go to Clemson, but they didn't have my major, so I had to pass by. And went to another school. Finished my education there and played ball, but also got well introduced to alcohol at my second university and got introduced to some clubs. I'd never been in clubs before, but I learned a lot about clubs and dancing and alcohol, especially after basketball season was finally done. And I really still wasn't sure what to think about it. I know it was very frowned upon, and even at the school I was at, but I really didn't let it interfere with my life at that point. And so after I graduated that, I went back home to live with my mother and go to the University of South Carolina. That's quite a contradiction, to do my master's degree. And while I worked on my master's, I was running the women's intramural department and also became the first women's assistant basketball coach at South Carolina. We were a powerhouse team, top four, a scandalous program, I might add, but we were still a top four program. I stayed there for almost 3 years and decided to leave the scandal part of it behind. And did not drink during those 3 years. I went back to church, went back to leading youth college kids, back to my roots, back to having a relationship with God. But when the South Carolina thing ended, all of a sudden alcohol came into play. It was very strange, and I drank a fair amount, but I was not an alcoholic. I didn't even know what an alcoholic was, quite frankly. I found another job after South Carolina, became the athletic director and head basketball and tennis coach at Winthrop University in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Then the game was on. I really discovered bars, partying, my sexuality, all the while trying to run a university athletic program and not let them find out about it. That's pretty hard, especially when your players end up at the same bar that you're frequenting. And you can't tell them not to go because they're going to show up anyway. So I had got away from my roots. I quit going to church. I quit dealing with God. I just did what I wanted to do. And that really didn't turn out so well for me. After 3 years at Winthrop, and we had a very successful program, I had an offer to come to Atlanta to be the general manager of the first women's pro basketball team here. And I thought, oh, more glamour, more money, because I'll tell you, back then, women's basketball coaches and athletic directors, we made zip compared to the men. Absolutely zip. Now, had I known that my friend Pat Head at Tennessee, back then it was Pat Head before it became Summit, would turn women's basketball on its heels into a major money-making adventure, I might have stuck with it. But at the time, we didn't make anything, and our lives were under scrutiny 24/7. You had no life, period. And I'd had enough of that at South Carolina. So I came to Atlanta. I did the pro thing, ended up coaching the team as well. And I decided I had enough of prima donnas in basketball. Now, mind you, that's all I ever wanted to do was coach college basketball, period. Didn't want to teach high school, didn't want to go through all that. I just wanted to coach. And I did it, been there, done that, let it go. But I decided I wanted to stay in Atlanta. It was seemed like a lot to do. Thought I'd find a good job. In the meantime, I'd find a physical job to keep my head on straight. So I started working for a building supply company, a family-owned supply company in Marietta. I would work from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock in the morning, loading trucks, delivering material, windows, doors, whatnot, learning Atlanta at night. I'd never driven a big truck before. That was an interesting situation. But I was also back to not drinking when I first came to Atlanta. And why was that? Because I had no money. Zero. No money at all. That first Thanksgiving, my mother had to, embarrassingly enough, come to Atlanta, go grocery shopping for me. I didn't even have money to feed the cats. That's how broke I was. Very embarrassing. But she took me for Thanksgiving, bought the groceries. So forget having money to buy a beer. That wasn't going to happen. And that was a good thing. However, I was in the building supply business. And mind you, I will also tell you that after I would work at the building supply company all day, I would go throw the AJC at night for a couple of hours, sleep a couple of hours, thinking I was going to find that real job. Well, I found the real job, the building supply company. After 2.5 months, they put me into inside sales. They never had a woman in shipping, and they certainly never had a woman in inside sales. We weren't supposed to amass any accounts, maybe two, but by the end of 8 months, I had over 50 accounts and was outselling the outside salesman. But a strange thing was happening during that time. I was watching and observing the outside salesman, and all they did was drink. They drank before sales meetings, after sales meetings, taking builders to lunch, dinner. Golf was a big thing. And then I got into outside sales right after that because my sales had amassed. And the drinking game was on. Because I learned real quick in the building supply business and in the building business, drinking goes hand in hand with that business. Or at least that's what I thought. Because every single person I knew in that company drank. All my builders drank, and golf was a necessity. They used to make fun of me at first. I got tired of that. I said, I'm going to learn to play golf, and I'm going to whip your asses. And I did, because I could. But I also wanted to drink them under the table. And I learned how to do that as well. In the beginning, I was a beer drinker, and really didn't like beer, but I had to drink to fit in. So it was part of the process, I guess. Joined a social golf club that's no longer in existence in Marietta or Kennesaw, and then the drinking was really on. I was making a lot of money in sales. I had no idea that it would be that lucrative. In the first 2 years of outside sales, I bought my house that I'm still in. I've somehow, with God's grace, managed not to lose it. Bought a boat. That was about the dumbest thing I've ever done. Very dumb. But what came with the boat? Friends. Instant friends. I had a lot of friends at my house every weekend. I still live a mile from the lake. They all wanted to go to Brown's place. They could drink and go boating. That lasted until the boat motor blew up after a couple of years. And then the boat went away. Bankruptcy came in. The building industry tumbled about 91, I guess. 91 was an interesting year. Did the bankruptcy. My girlfriend sent me to an empowering thing called the Experience and hoped that I would stop drinking. I still didn't think I was an alcoholic. I only drank socially. Didn't drink at home by myself, but that wasn't true. I was drinking a bottle of wine a night, at least. I hadn't hit the hard liquor yet. Didn't know really what that was. But all kind of things happened in 91, and I didn't learn not one lesson. The DUI, got a DUI the same year, learned absolutely nothing. Back then, it didn't cost as much money. You didn't have to go to rehab. You didn't have to go to AA. You didn't have to do anything. Basically, you go sit in a little class, lie about all the questions that would have told me I was an alcoholic had I told the truth, but I wasn't going to tell the truth. And the building industry came back. I started making money hand over fist again. Back to the golfing again. And it was just not drinking. Well, I'm going to say I might have been drinking every day, but I still wasn't drinking hard liquor. But I was spending money hand over fist. And in 98, my number one builders got together and said, you need to quit this company. And we've contacted all your other suppliers. You can make a lateral move or you can start your own business, but we're moving our business from this company. Not you, the company. So I didn't make lateral moves. That wasn't my intention. So I started my own company, Classic Custom Works, with the help of financial aid from a good friend of mine in the industry. Made a multi-million dollar company. I held it for 18 years. In 08, we moved into a brand new building. Hear that year, 08. Brand new building, new trucks, had about 13 employees. New warehouse, new showroom, new everything. 08 to 012. What happened? The bottom fell out. And there went my money. There went all of my money. And I had to rob Peter to pay Paul, but I managed to pay my employees through that. But at the end of 12, I said, I'm done. I wasn't done with the company, but I was done with the new building, all the employees, and everything else. But by this time, I was drinking every day, starting from the minute my feet touched the ground in the morning. But I still was an alcoholic, right? People called me a functioning alcoholic. So that's what I led myself to believe, that that wasn't a real alcoholic. I was just a functioning alcoholic, whatever that was. In Hiram, Georgia, where my business was located, Hiram in Dallas, they have a Longhorns there. I guess I was notorious. I'd take the group to lunch every day, and we walk in the door, and the bottles of Kendall Jackson were sitting on the table and with wine glasses there with my name on it. Longhorns on one side, Karen on the other. That should have told me something, but it didn't. But eventually the dishwashers broke the wine glasses, and that was the end of that, or so I thought. So in 2012, I got rid of all that stuff. My assistant moved the business to my basement. Had no trucks. I rented a warehouse, rented the trucks when I had to. Got my drivers when I needed them. But it was a miserable, miserable existence because I was drinking 24/7. By this time, I had already been drinking 24/7 for several years. I figured my people were at work in Dallas, Georgia. I could stay home and drink and nobody know the difference. I drank every day. When I drove, I drank every day. I had alcohol in the car 24/7. Not proud of it, but that's what I did because I couldn't stop. I couldn't help myself. I did stop a few times. If I would go on a South Beach diet, I would stop for a month, month and a half, lose a bunch of weight. But the minute that I picked up a beer or anything, I was back in the good old Evan Williams by the time nightfall hit. Evan Williams became my best friend. I quit playing golf. I lost my friends, all of them. But that was the price I paid. I learned a lot about alcoholism, but I still didn't want to call myself an alcoholic. So in 2016, the bottom was really falling out. My assistant's husband, who was a lot younger than 20 years younger than me, he was a major alcoholic and drug addict. He managed to kill himself on purpose with a heroin overdose because she wouldn't let him see the kids anymore. And yet she had to put up with me every day with the drinking. So in 2016, in April, I went to the Masters as usual. Of course, I was drunk before I got there because I started out drinking in the morning, met friends over there, could barely drink any of their little cheap beer because I was sick all day. Don't know how I drove home that night, but I got home about midnight and immediately threw up blood. So I knew I had a real problem. The next morning, I went to urgent care. I barely could walk in the building. They immediately put IVs in me. I went through two bags, and the ambulance came and took me to the hospital. That was a weekend. That was Friday, so I stayed there through Sunday, checked myself out. They were not happy. Obviously, I needed to stay. My GI doctor came in. He said, "What did I tell you about this drinking?" He said, "If you drink, you're going to die." I'm like, "I hear you." So I quit for about a month and a half. Once again, first time I picked up a glass of wine, I was back down to 24/7, just that quick. Now, during all this time, I was also having to go to Columbia at least once a month because my mother was in assisted living and my sister was nowhere to be found. She had abandoned her, so I had to go take care of her and visit her. Didn't have to. I wanted to because my mom and I were extremely close. And she was not doing well whatsoever, and worse than I actually thought. So when October rolled around, Sam had quit. She had put in her notice and quit in August, and I disappeared off the map, folks. I wouldn't answer the phone. I wouldn't talk to anybody. My builders didn't know where I was. Homeowners figured out that I was drinking on the job when I went and threw up in their backyard. I was sick. I would shake so bad, my nervous system was shot to hell. I could not hold a tape measure on a job site and measure a window. It was impossible. It was embarrassing. So I would get in my little truck and grab my alcohol and go drive around or go home. Like I said, there was always alcohol in the truck. I'm sure my blood was pure alcohol based on all my liver tests. So in October, the first week in October, I decided I was going to quit drinking in 16. So I stopped drinking on my own. I wasn't coming to AA. And I knew nothing about detox. I knew nothing about how it was going to affect my body. It tore me up. I was so yellow by that time. But I couldn't look at myself in the mirror and see that. And I got so deathly sick. I was so weak, emancipated. And a friend came over to clean the house. Well, a paid friend, not a friend. My friends were long gone. And she said, "You're going to the hospital." So she and my next door neighbor had to put me in the car physically. And off we went. And I was there for a week. They stabilized me somewhat. And again, the hospital, like they're supposed to do, tried to set me up with the care people and tried to get me to go to rehab, tried to get me to go to a detox. They didn't mention AA. They really wanted me in a treatment program. I'm like, I can't do that. I've got a Labrador at home. I've got my house at home. I've got to go home. So I came home. Still not drinking. I had quit. But then, in a two-week period, my liver basically quit functioning. I gained 30 pounds in 2 weeks. Could not put on shoes. If you touched me, I would start bleeding. I was bruised, and it was awful. So after that two-week period, I got home that night, about midnight. I called 911. I said, "You got to come get me. I feel like my body's going to explode." So the ambulance came. And lo and behold, it was the same two ambulance drivers from April. They're like, "Oh, you look familiar. Alcohol?" I'm like, "Yeah." I said, "Y'all look familiar too," because they were pretty cute. And I couldn't forget those faces ever. It was like something you see on TV. So they took me to the hospital. And I did not know, the hospital did not know if I was going to live or die. I was at that point. It took 2 days before they could stabilize me to get 2 liters of fluid out of me. So by the third day, I had some stability. They still didn't want me up walking around because literally I would fall down if I did. But on the fourth day, I said, "Okay, God, I give up. And that was it. I said, if you will take the obsession of drinking away from me, I will do whatever you want. I'll give my life back to you. And I'm in it. That obsession was gone, people. It was gone. It was a miracle. I was a miracle. I am a miracle. Since that day, I've had no obsession to drink, no craving, no nothing. I don't want it. I don't need it. I want to do God's will. Before I came to the hospital that time, one of my good neighborhood friends, she knew I was trying to quit drinking, or I had quit drinking, and she said, you need to go to this place called the Howe Place. It's right down the road. I'll go with you. She said, but there's great people there, good people for you to meet. I'll help you. So I told the doctors I was not going to rehab. I was not going to detox. I was going to AA. I was going to the Howe Place, and they couldn't stop me. They thought, we'll see how this works. Once again, my GI came in. He said, didn't we have this discussion a couple of times already? He said, you need to go get help. He said, you're going to die if you drink. I said, I'm not going to drink. I had a talk with God. I'm not going to drink. It's done. So that Sunday night, I got out of the hospital. My best friend Karen came to get me. She was in a state of shock. She had not seen me in 6-7 months. I looked horrible. Those of you that saw me that Monday morning know how horrible I looked. I was still completely yellow, shaking to death. Looked like death, felt like death, but I was still alive. So she came and got me from the hospital. Took me to the house. She and my other good friend, my only non-drinking friend, Teresa, were cleaning the house from top to bottom, not knowing if I was going to come back alive or not come back at all. So Teresa left, and I told Karen Murray to find every drop of alcohol in that house and pour it out. And she did. We did. She was in shock, but it had to go. Absolutely had to go. So we did that until about 1 in the morning. The next morning, I got up. Somehow, I made it here. Walked in the door. Scared to death to walk in here. Scared to death. I had all kind of notions about what AA was and wasn't. And boy, was I in for a shock. I didn't walk in with a bunch of homeless, derelict people. I walked in with people like me. All the other people that were in here looked a whole lot better than I looked. I probably looked like a leper, and I was surprised anybody talked to me at all. But they did. They hugged me. They told me to come back. They gave me a packet with names and numbers. I still have that packet to this day. It meant more to me than I can ever imagine. It was awesome. When they said the Serenity Prayer at the beginning and the Lord's Prayer at the end, I knew I was home. I was back. And I knew that God was in this room. My God. Got a temporary sponsor immediately. Read the 164 pages very fast. I read very, very quickly. Didn't have a clue what the steps were. But started reading them. I thought, I got the first three real quick because I was totally powerless over alcohol. You get up and you have to drink 24 hours or every minute you're awake, you're powerless over alcohol. Unmanageable? Well, I'd pretty much proven my whole life was unmanageable. No doubt about that. A power greater than myself could restore us to sanity. That's why God and I were talking. Made that decision to turn my will and my life back over to the care of God 100%. It wasn't that easy. I mean, it's easy. But I had a lot of work to do in all those areas, especially the admitting part, being humble to walk in the door and say, I'm Karen, I'm an alcoholic. I cried every meeting. in the beginning. Every time I spoke, I cried. It was powerful. It's just powerful. A week after I came in here, mind you, I was not missing a meeting. I had to leave and go to Columbia because my mother was dying. I had to go sign hospice papers. And while I was there, I got to show her my white chip, and then she died the next day. It was tough, but I didn't pick up a drink. I did not pick up that drink. My mother was the one that got me to be friends with Evan Williams, funny enough, because that was her drink of choice until she had quit drinking. But through all that, I didn't drink. I came back here, back in this meeting on Monday, and never looked back. I found my home. Found my solution. Alcohol was not a solution to anything I did. I wanted to go make amends immediately, but fortunately, I listened to people in this room. I was making a list, but I knew it wasn't time. First, I had to learn to make living amends. I had to. Nobody would have believed me if I went out there and said, "Hey, I'm in AA. I am cured." Not, because my actions speak louder than words. So my new actions had to speak louder than words this time. I had to live it. Little by little, very slowly, my friends started to see the changes, and some of them came back. Little by little, I was able to make that list. God already knew, but at least I could talk to him about it, to myself and to my sponsor, all of the nature of my wrongs. The other thing I learned real quick was about character defects. This program is not just about stopping drinking. Alcohol is but a symptom. I had to learn about my character defects. I had put them under a rug for 40 years. People, I came in this room when I was 60 years old. God gave me a second chance so I could help other alcoholics not do what I did. 40 years of hard drinking. I calculated that money one day. I was like, whoo-wee, that was not good. But that was neither here nor there. I had the opportunity to come back, ask God to remove my shortcomings. I still ask God to remove my shortcomings all the time, because, you know, we're not cured of alcohol, and we certainly have character defects that are going to keep showing up. And we have to work on it. We have to do a personal inventory. I have to do a personal inventory all the time, keep myself in check during the day, at night, before I go to bed. That, along with my gratitude list. I was taught very early on, write a gratitude list every night. 10 things you're grateful for. And then my brother over here, he told me, you need to write a powerlessness list. I'm like, what's that? And he taught me. And that became part of my nightly ritual too. And that was a very interesting list, all the things I was powerless over. But then I finally got to the list, the real list, and was willing to make amends. Now, you know, making those amends to people, got different lists of different things, the work people, the family people, which I had few of, but four different lists of people. And you can't always reach out to all of them. Some of them have passed on. Some of them don't ever want to hear from me again. Some of them I wrote letters to. Amends takes a lot of different forms. But it had to be done. Because if you don't do that, you're not clear to move on to everything else. Continue to take personal inventory. That's a daily thing. Prayer, meditation. If I didn't have prayer and meditation, every day starts when I'm out walking the dogs with talking to God as I'm going around the block. Every morning my roommate and I do devotions and meditations before the day gets started. When COVID came, I took myself out of this room because I couldn't take that chance. Another thing that happened during COVID is I picked up a roommate. And that was all God's doing too. saw on Facebook she was living in a hotel with her service dog. And I said, you need to call me. We knew each other from the program. We didn't really know each other. I said, you can't live in a hotel with Clarence, the dog. What are you doing? And she left a relationship and her kid and all this, a lot of drama stuff. But neither here nor there, she came over, but she rented an apartment and then finances fell through. So I said, why don't you just stay? Plus, she needed a knee replaced. I said, you can't live in an apartment and do that. You got to have 24/7 care. Once again, God doing for me what I could not do for myself, because COVID came. She didn't have a job. She couldn't work. She's disabled. I couldn't work for the Braves, couldn't work for Lake Point. Window work was still out there, very incredible. Gave me some extra financing so I could let go of those jobs and not worry about it. Gave me somebody in the house to talk to about this program on a daily basis, somebody to do devotions with on a daily basis. And one of the members in the house place, people got together, and we started a Zoom meeting, the Breakfast Club AM and PM, 8 o'clock morning, 8 o'clock night Zoom meeting. So I missed this place, I missed the people, but a lot of those people, a lot of you guys were actually in the AM and PM meetings. Work got so busy, and I'm back with the Braves. I did drop Lake Point totally. But work got so busy, I had to back out of the AM meeting, but we still do the Crazy Eight. We changed our name to the Crazy Eights. So we still have Breakfast Club people in the Crazy Eights, and we have newcomers, and that we keep that going every night of the week, and that has been a life-saving solution for me. I can't do without AA. I absolutely cannot. And I have to have a way to give back. Step 12, most important, carrying this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs. I have to do that every day. And if I get self-centered, I need to pick up the phone and call another alcoholic. I need to find somebody to help. And there's a lot of people out here to help, a lot. Make myself available, get sponsees, work with sponsees. And it's an ongoing thing. We have to get rid of the self-centeredness. I've been very, very blessed. When we read the promises, we read that every day for a while until we came up with the book of promises. Now, the promises on 83 and 84, to watch those things come true, I didn't in my wildest dream think any of that was come true. I'll tell you a cute little story. I didn't know where I was going to work when I got sober because my company was in shambles and gone. I owed everybody in the house cat. But Home Depot wouldn't even hire me. I thought, well, you're really low on the totem pole here. You're a window and door person and they won't hire you. But I got hired by Chili's to serve alcohol. Ask me how that went. It didn't even get off the ground. I got hired, and God does things for you you can't do for yourself. I'm out with a big blower backpack on one night at night blowing because I'm anal about that stuff in my yard, and I tripped over the sidewalk, fell backwards with the thing blowing and working, and busted up my shoulder and my elbow. I was in a sling for months. And golly, all of a sudden I can't serve that alcohol. What do you know? They said, well, maybe you could be the receptionist for a while. I said, no, maybe. I think God's telling me, you don't need to be here. Leave. And about that time, that's when I said, God, how about something in sports? And I was able to land the job with being a tour guide for the Braves, which I still do, managing at Lake Point Sporting Community, which I left during COVID. And my window work is phenomenal. All kind of doors open. I found myself working five jobs after 6 months. You know, they say don't jump into things right away when you come in. The things I tried to jump into, God said no. When it was time, God said yes. So all these things were provided for me that I could never, ever have even dreamed of. You know, I had a roommate the first year. A 25-year-old roommate with, forgive me, Josie, with purple hair. And that didn't work out so well. But she lasted a year. I didn't kill her. But I told her if she didn't change her ways, she was going to have to go because I couldn't let her push me to drink. I learned a lot of patience that first year in my new sober life. It was quite interesting to watch the growth. Managed to live by myself for a while, but like I said, having my roommate now is fantastic. Sharing the program with somebody is wonderful. The solution is right here. It's in the big book, The Design for Living. Every time I've been through the big book, I don't know, 6 or 7 times now in the last less than 5 years. Every day I read something. I read the same things over and over, and I get something new out of it. Every day. It's totally amazing. My relationship with God is a daily thing. That's a growing deal. Got to grow spiritually in this program to make it work. And you got to have balance. Spiritual, emotional, physical, mental. All of those things to make life work and keep it in check. So I enjoy my sober life today. I enjoy giving back. I enjoy the fact that God gave me a second chance. And God gave me AA. Thanks.